Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens, brought to you by Compassion International, a worldwide ministry bringing hope and Jesus to children in need. Visit CrawfordMediaGroup.net and click on the Compassion logo to sponsor a child. And now, here are your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush.
Very happy to be back with you folks for another week of the National Crawford Roundtable with John, Roger, Neil, myself, Bob Duco. Guys, how are you?
Good morning,
Good,
Bob.
Well, Bob.
Good, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, well, just lovely. Thank you. Hey, you know what? We haven't been canceled yet. We haven't been woke canceled yet out of the cancel culture, so that's always a good thing. I look at what's going on with the craziness of the woke cancel culture, and folks, that's what we're going to talk about this week. The latest victim is Dr. Seuss. And so here's where we stand with Dr. Seuss. We're going to talk a little bit about Dr. Seuss himself and him being pretty much the latest victim of the cancel culture, and then we will move this to a larger discussion of other things that are part of the whole cancel culture going on, and how as Christians we should be viewing stuff like this. You know, do we be so insensitive as to give no thought whatsoever to people that say that they're offended by a lot of the things, whether it's in Dr. Seuss or other issues, or do we tell people, no, we're not going to cave into this and enable this kind of hypersensitivity? And so we'll explore all of that. But if you haven't seen the news, Dr. Seuss, six of his books are not going to be published because of what's being identified as racist images. These six books are The Cat's Quizzer, McElligot's Pool, On Beyond Zebra, Scrambled Eggs Super, If I Ran the Zoo, and To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street. They also say at Dr. Seuss's enterprise there that they are examining the other books and they may be adding some more to the chopping list. We don't know yet. Will it be Green Eggs and Ham? Will it be Cat in a Hat? Who really knows? I look at this and I find this sad. I really do. Dr. Seuss books have sold 650 million copies. They're in 95 countries. By the way, in 2017, Senator Kamala Harris tweeted, "Happy birthday, Dr. Seuss," on March 2nd, which was his birthday, and then quoted him, "Barack Obama is president all 8 years on National Read Across America Day." You know, the president issues a proclamation. All 8 years, Barack Obama honored Dr. Seuss in his March 2nd proclamations in this. As a matter of fact, presidents do this. Donald Trump did this as well. Why? Because March 2nd was Dr. Seuss's birthday, and so that's the Read Across America Day. But this year is different. This year, Joe Biden has decided he's going to snub Dr. Seuss. And so in Read Across America Day, which was specifically designed to be March 2nd to line up with Dr. Seuss's birthday, Dr. Seuss has been snubbed. He has been scrubbed. He's not mentioned in it at all. And this is just the latest. We're going to talk about other things like Hasbro making Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head go gender neutral and then backing down after pressure good. But a lot of other things, too. Aunt Jemima syrup. Oh, can't have that anymore. It's got to be changed in its name. Mrs. Butterworth's Uncle Ben's Rice's logo. The Land O'Lakes Butter logo. Sports teams like the Washington Redskins. The Muppet Show now has an offensive content warning from the 1960s. And just so many other examples of this that we're going to be talking about. So let's start by kind of going around the table and getting some thoughts first on Dr. Seuss himself. And now even Dr. Seuss is considered politically incorrect and unsafe for our children to read. Round the table we go. Why don't we start with John Rush, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado. John, what do you think? I mean, Dr. Seuss, this is a classic.
Yep,
I was reading a report. One out of four children in America, Dr. Seuss was the very first book that they learned to read from. One out of four. And now suddenly he's verboten.
Yeah, I will tell you that, you know, with all of my kids, it was probably,
you know, one for one. In other words, they all started that way. And I've watched the grandkids, and it's a similar situation there. So, you know, as far as our family goes, it's just one of those things that, to your point, Bob, is what the kids learn to read on it. You know, and frankly, me personally, I mean, I've never been a huge Dr. Seuss fan. It's great for the kids, but after that, you know, whatever. But you know, again, that's me. I do, though, have a problem where we start labeling things constantly that we feel are offensive, quote unquote, and I say that in those words. And you talked earlier, even, you know, what's our proper Christian response to some of these things? And guys, let's face it, I will be the first to say there has been some things probably throughout history where you can now look back on some of those things, and maybe at the time when we were viewing them and watching them, it wasn't offensive and we really didn't think twice about it. But now that things have changed, and things always change, you can look at a few things and say, yeah, you know, that was probably not in the best way. It wasn't done in the best way at that particular time. But again, it was at that time. Now, that doesn't excuse anything, and I do think that we can make corrections and move forward in a better way. Although, guys, I want to add this caveat, not at the expense of everything that's ever been done, there's lots of things that can offend all sorts of things. The gospel, by the way, offends people on a daily basis. Does it mean we should wipe it out as well? The answer is, of course not. Right. So just because something is offensive doesn't mean it needs to go away. Do we as Christians need to be sensitive to certain things that may offend others in a way that we would not want to offend them? Guys, of course, we're always going to say that. But if something is truth and factual, we're not going to steer away from that either.
Right. Neil, what do you think? Neil Boron, of course, Neil Boron live out of Buffalo, New York. Your take on Dr. Seuss having 6 books banned and maybe more now.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. On the other hand, I did a little bit of research. I'm not a huge Dr. Seuss fan. I remember reading Green Eggs and Ham when I was a kid, and maybe read it to our kids as well. But, you know, there were some images that he posted back, like, you know, in the 30s and 40s and stuff that were pretty questionable. But, you know, the idea that a few people can all of a sudden decide what's right and wrong for an entire society is what's troublesome and even disheartening, because it takes away the ability of real educators and parents and other influence makers in the lives of kids to decide, you know, what's good, what's bad, as though we're not adults, as though we're not thinking Americans, as though we ourselves can't progress, like John just, you know, indicated. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we watched on TV, cartoons, that had what I would say some pretty racist stereotypes, and a lot of them have been taken off the air. But the point is, we live in free America. People ought to be able to express their views and opinions, some of which are offensive. That's at the heart of what it means to have freedom of speech. And I don't know, it's troubling, very troubling to see that there's a small group of people, apparently, I don't know how large the group is, but it seems to me like an elite few that are feeling like they can make decisions for everyone else. And I think that's where we really ought to be concerned.
Sure. Roger Marsh, of course, the bottom line out of the People's Republic of California. You know, Roger, I know we're going to be talking about a lot of the other victims of wokeness and cancel culture, but of course, right now we're focusing on the latest with Dr. Seuss. Roger, I want to read to you from Barack Obama's last presidential proclamation of Read Across America Day. This was March 2nd, 2016. So just in 2016, this was not politically incorrect for him to say this. He says, as part of his proclamation, quote, "On Read Across America Day, we recommit to getting literary works into our young people's hands early and often. March 2nd is also the birthday of one of America's revered wordsmiths. Theodore Seuss Geisel, or Dr. Seuss, used his incredible talent to instill in his most impressionable readers universal values we all hold dear. Through a prolific collection of stories, he made children see that reading is fun, and in the process, he emphasized respect for all, pushed us to," that line, "he emphasized respect for all, pushed us to accept ourselves for who we are, challenged preconceived notions, and encouraged trying new things, and by example, taught us that we are limited by nothing but the range of our aspirations and the vibrancy of our imaginations. And for older lovers of literature, he reminded us to take ourselves not too seriously, creating wacky and wild characters and envisioning creative and colorful places One more line, he said, quote, as Dr. Seuss noted, quote, the more you read, the more things you will know, the more that you learn, the more places you'll go. Together, we can all help children go plenty of places along their unending journey for knowledge and ensure everyone can find joy and satisfaction in the wonders of the written word. I mean, Barack Obama honored Dr. Seuss all 8 years of his presidency during his March 2nd proclamations. As a matter of fact, Kamala Harris, as I say, in 2017, tweeted on March 2nd, quote, happy birthday, Dr. Seuss, and then put a big quote in there of his. And now, here we are, Roger, 4 years later, suddenly Dr. Seuss is so racist, so wrong, it's got to be censored, we got to protect our kids from this. It is insane the warp speed that this is moving, this whole wokeness movement has been moving just in the last couple few years.
Yeah, it really is. And I know we've got a break coming up here we want to get to in just a moment, but I want to follow up on what you said about the quote from Barack Obama, because I saw a video about that too. I mean, that where he's actually reciting some of this stuff and everyone's just joining right in. That's 4 years ago. What happened
know,
in 4 years?
I know, it is insane. It's incredible. Roger, yeah. Let's do this. Let's take a short break, and then I'd love to get your take on all of that. More as we continue this National Crawford Roundtable in just a moment. But first, everybody, you know, we talk about Dr. Seuss and children and reading and such. Have you ever really taken the time to think about children in really poverty-stricken regions around the world? These are children that are starving. Nobody is sitting down reading to them green eggs and ham. As a matter of fact, they would give anything to be able to eat some green eggs and ham. Truth is, folks, children are starving in poverty-stricken areas, impoverished all around the world. They're begging for food, just trying to survive. I've been on a lot of missions trips with Compassion International. I've seen with my own eyes these children crying because they're hungry. They haven't eaten anything, sometimes in multiple days. You know, for $38 a month, you can feed one of these hungry children. They'll get all the hot food they want every single day. Just $38 a month, a buck and a quarter a day. But it's not just food. It's clean drinking water. It's medical care. It's classroom education. It's whatever clothing they need. And above all, it's the gospel of Jesus Christ being preached to them. They're being prayed with and prayed for, given a Bible in their own language. They actually get to have toys and friends and play, and they have a life entirely different from what they've known. And they know you personally by name, writing you letters, coloring pictures for you, and saying, thank you for doing this for me. So here's what I'm asking everybody listening to this podcast to do right now. Would you prayerfully decide to sponsor a child? Just go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. That's CrawfordMediaGroup.net, and you'll see the Compassion link. Click right on there. You'll see pictures of unsponsored children. Go ahead and sponsor one or two or however many you can afford to do. But please do it right now if you would. CrawfordMediaGroup.net. Continuing our discussion here on the National Crawford Roundtable about the wokeness cancel culture, Dr. Seuss being the latest victim. And Roger Marsh, you were commenting before the break about the insanity of this in such a short period of time. Just 4 years ago, Kamala Harris was tweeting praises honoring Dr. Seuss. Just 5 years ago, Barack Obama, for the eighth year in a row, was issuing proclamations on his birthday honoring him. And now, after just 4 years of Trump, the wokeness culture has turned him into something that, like pornography, should not be viewed out in the public. And I find this sickening. This is happening so quickly.
Yeah, and that's the real tragedy here, is the fact that it is happening so quickly. I mentioned before the break, I was watching a video last night, probably on TikTok or something like that, and it was President Obama with a group of young people, and it was on Dr. Seuss Day, the Read Across America Day, and he was basically giving a very well-prepared address to these kids, using kind of a Dr. Seuss type of thing. He was saying, hey, you know, how many of us have, you know, we know what the star-belly sneeches are all about, and, you know, what did Horton hear, and everything. And the kids are all reacting to it, and I'm thinking, okay, so that's 2016. And now in 2021, we've got this legalistic, woke culture, white guilt-driven, oh my gosh, everything's offensive and everything must go. And it really, the first thing I thought of, you know, as we were looking at the topic is obviously we don't want to be offensive to people. We don't want to be intentionally offensive. And I resonated with what John and Neil were saying about things that have been in the culture before that, you know, as you're a kid growing up watching cartoons, for example, and you don't know, you know, until you look back afterwards and go, whoa, they were really pushing an envelope there, but that's kind of where our culture was. But now it's like the whole country anyway, I don't know what is worldwide, but the whole United States culture seems to be James 2:10. You know, I mean, the whole idea, you know, whoever keeps the whole law but offends at just one point is guilty of breaking all of it. You know, I mean, that's where the cancel culture is going. And Bob, as you mentioned, in warp speed, and as Neil's point, just a few people are making decisions about this. It really kind of, it blurs the vision of what really could be done. I mean, yes, there are some offensive things in culture. Yes, there are some ways that people are intentionally or unintentionally offending people. But the fact that the solution seems to be, well, we looked at 50 of Dr. Seuss's books and 43 of them have negative stereotypes, so they all should be gone. I mean, where's the conversation? Where's the discussion? I mean, there are some people who just know we have to cancel. We go right to the end of the conversation and that's it, instead of having the dialogue. And that to me is the most chilling part of everything that's happening here. I mean, people are going to offend people. I mean, and there are things that we can stand up to that are morally offensive that we should be decrying. But the idea that everybody's got a bazooka now and you see something you don't like, boom, just blow it away. That's terrifying to me.
Right. Well, you know, John, I think about, we look at Dr. Seuss. Okay, I mean, his books led to 3 Academy Awards, 3 Emmy Awards, 3 Grammy Awards. It's really a shame, obviously, but we know it's not stopping there. We saw what just happened with Hasbro that tried to gender neutralize Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head by just calling them Potato Head. Thankfully, there was enough backlash and enough embarrassment heaped on them that they backed off of that decision. But there's a lot of other things as well. Land O'Lakes butter for over 100 years had the logo of that Native American woman. Well, that's gone. Aunt Jemima now has to be called Pearl Milling Company because that was the name of the company that originally created the Aunt Jemima brand of pancake batter. Okay, yeah, that makes my mouth water for pancakes, Pearl Milling Company. But Mrs. Butterworth, same thing. Uncle Ben's Rice, that logo, same thing. The sports teams, Redskins, can't call themselves the Redskins. On top of that, Coca-Cola teaching people to be less white. Okay, well, I think those polar bears and the Coke commercials are probably in trouble now. But Gone with the Wind with the warning disclaimers, the Muppet Show now with the offensive content warnings, UK hospitals are saying we're not going to call it breastfeeding anymore, we're going to call it chest feeding. John, how do we handle stuff like this? Because it almost seems as though we're moving beyond common sense. We're moving into the absurd. It's almost like a real life Saturday Night Live skit. I can understand somebody saying, hey, Amos and Andy, okay, you know, that's not really appropriate for today. Al Jolson, blackface, okay, fine. But my goodness, where does the hypersensitivity in this thing end? Mr. Potato Head, really?
You know, I don't think it does. And you also miss another one, which is the Cherokee Nation being upset with Jeep for having a Jeep Cherokee.
Right.
So,
that's,
you know, there's we can just keep going down the list here, guys, to the point where is there going to be like a list of approved names that companies can even use moving forward when it comes to marketing a particular product? And, you know, on the same token, when you were talking a moment ago, Bob, I just thought for a minute, and guys, bear with me here, and I'd love to get you guys' thoughts, but are we not just now seeing in the greater public what really has been going on inside of the church for a very long time? And what I mean by that is, think about all the times you guys have been inside of a church where a pastor said something that really was truthful but may have been offensive, and X amount of people left because he said X, even though it was most likely true and probably coming from Scripture, but because they didn't like what was being said, they decided to go someplace else. So are we as a church really just now pushing what we've always done inside the church out into the public, and is some of this on us?
Well, yes. I don't know. What do you think, Neil?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to me it goes back to the garden, because mankind thought, you know, mankind could be as God. Adam and Eve, you know, sinned against God because they believed the lie that somehow, you know, their power, their blessing was being withheld. I mean, they obviously believed they were missing out on something, that God wasn't telling them the whole truth. So they believed the lie of the serpent and sinned against God. But ever since then, ever since the fall, and ever since brokenness entered the world, it seems like man has tried to repair his own breach, in other words. Some of the ramifications of that centuries later is, you know, thousands of years later, is stuff like kids growing up in a bubble wrap world, like where you can't go to a playground unless everything is, you know, has rubber chips underneath it, and the kids are wrapped in bubble wrap before they get on the slide. So we don't want any sickness. We don't want hurt feelings. You know, we want to try to fix everything. And I think that this is just like the end result of all this, or it's part of the process, in other words, where we just try to decide what other hurtful things we can eliminate by making up new rules and regulations. And really, where's the bottom? There's no bottom to this. It just keeps going, and it gets worse and worse, and it eventually spirals out of control. This is utter insanity, ultimately, when you look at it like that.
It does seem to be. And I'll tell you what, let's take another short break, and then we'll continue this discussion next here on the National Crawford Roundtable. I talked to you folks earlier about sponsoring a child today through Compassion International. If you didn't do that before, I'm just going to ask you point blank, would you prayerfully consider doing that right now? I mean, all over the world, you have children living in abject poverty, folks. They are literally dying of starvation, of malnutrition, of disease. They need food. They need clean drinking water. They need medical care. They need to be educated in classrooms. They need to be taught about Jesus Christ. They need to be prayed with. You see, this takes money, everybody. $38 a month, $1.25 a day, and you can change a child's life. And the nice thing is, it's not like you have to get on a plane and fly over there and do all of the work yourself. Compassion International does all the work. They do all the heavy lifting. The only thing you have to do is pay for it each month. And it's entirely up to you how you pay for it. But I would ask you right now, just go online to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. That's CrawfordMediaGroup.net. You'll see the Compassion link right there. Click on that if you would. See a bunch of pictures of unsponsored children that have just been waiting for you to finally sponsor them. And they'll know you by name, writing letters to you, coloring pictures and everything. You write letters back to them too. So just go right now if you would, everybody. CrawfordMediaGroup.net. And let's rescue some of these kids. Continuing this National Crawford Roundtable discussion with myself, Bob Duco, with John Rush, with Neil Boron, with Roger Marsh. Roger, love to get your take on what Neil was talking about there, kind of a follow-up to John talking. This wokeness, this cancel culture, it really has gotten to the point of extreme. It's a Saturday Night Live skit now. As we mentioned before, it's one thing to say, okay, Amos and Andy, yeah, that's a little bit inappropriate. But now we're getting to the point where everybody's skin is basically like wet toilet paper. It's so thin, people get so offended so easy that they're almost looking for something to get offended by. And is it time for us to push back and say, no, you know what, enough is enough. I'm okay saying let's not play Amos and Andy. I'm not okay saying that we have to gender neutralize Mr. Potato Head or The Muppet Show has to have an offensive content warning.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Using those analogies or those examples are perfect, because I saw a meme earlier this week that was talking about in Joe Biden's America, because we heard that phrase Donald Trump's America for 4 years. In Joe Biden's America, you know, we're worried about the gender of a potato, a plastic potato with that. But his assistant secretary of Department of Health and Human Services wants to make sure the transgender medications are available for kids out on the street. You know, so in terms of, you know, children being mutilated in their bodies because they think they might have a gender identity issue, that's perfectly fine to the woke culture. But God forbid we have a Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head, or here in the People's Republic, we have different places where you can't segment articles of clothing or toys or whatever by male and female. You can't have a boys section and a girls section anymore, because that's not politically correct. I know we'll drill down on one of these points or two on the other side once we get into the podcast part, but I think that as much as I'm appreciating what we're saying, we also run the risk, I think kind of following up on John said, saying, isn't this what the church has been doing? We can run the risk of becoming that same vacuum if we take all of these issues, for example, throw them all into one big heap and say, and so therefore, we don't like any of them because you know, we're not really going case by case. I can make a pretty compelling case for a couple of these as saying, hey, maybe we do need to be not so much woke, but maybe a lot more sensitive to where people are. But, you know, quite frankly, I'm going to go out and get my grandson a Mr. Potato Head as soon as this program's done, because I think he would love messing around with that thing. And he's not going to care if there's a – he'll just know there's a boy Potato Head, there's a girl Potato Head, and that's all that really matters here.
Of course, Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head in the Toy Story movies was just a classic. Don Rickles playing Mr. Potato Head, and I can't remember the gal's name that played Mrs. Potato Head. But I still remember this hilarious line when Mr. Potato Head was leaving with all of the, and she's packing him, you know, and she's putting monkey chow in there. It's a monkey chow. Well, for the monkeys, of course. You know, but when he takes off and she screams out at him, and don't talk to any toys you don't know. You know, it's like just the perfect, you know, Mrs. Potato Head there. But yeah, I know. Well, you know what? Did you guys see that they're making a remake of The Wizard of Oz? Which I know they've done some variations of this, you know, The Wiz with Michael Jackson and, you know, the Oz Great and Powerful. And so there's been some movies made, but nobody's actually tried to take the specific Dorothy, Tin Man, Cowardly Lion, and the Scarecrow, and actually remake that movie. But apparently they're talking about doing that. And now I'm wondering, how can they actually get away with this? Because the hypersensitivity, is it going to be where Tin Man can't be called Tin Man? Does he need to be called Tin Person? Are they going to make one of those creatures in there transgender or gender neutral in some way? For that matter, is PETA going to protest because this is the exploitation of animals and the Cowardly Lion using a pejorative, you know, for lions? And the thing is, people hear that and they go, okay, come on, you're obviously making a joke. But are we really making a joke? I don't think it's that extreme that stuff like this could happen. And, you know, Neil, I know we got just about a minute to the break here, but real quick, your thoughts, because in the second half, I really want to move into how, as Christians, do we respond to this and where do we draw that line between accepting sensibilities and not enabling the hypersensitivity?
Well, obviously, and I know we all have a lot more to say about this on the other side, so we'll definitely do that. But like I said earlier, we haven't seen the bottom or the top, whichever way you want to go on this.
At the bottom. I'm saying bottom.
Okay. Because how low can it possibly go? And the other thing that I'll just mention real quick, kind of a tag team to some of what Roger was saying and others, is the idea, like, whatever happened to redemption? Like, isn't part of human life that especially in Christ, that there was an old me and now there's a new me? And so what about people who grew up perhaps with racist attitudes, but they've changed their opinion and today they're working to the betterment of all mankind, but because you can find something from their past 40, 50, 60 years ago, in the case of Dr. Seuss even, you know, where in his early years he put out some racial stereotypes in some of his political cartoons and then he changed his tune. But now, like almost 100 years later, he's getting canceled. What kind of a world are we living in where there's no opportunity for change? Ultimately, that's what we're supposed to be about. In fact, the whole cancel culture thing is supposed to be about positive change, right? But
amen.
Mm-hmm. We're all getting canceled in the process.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, I'll tell you what, in the second half of this podcast, we're going to dive into a lot more detail about how the church should be responding in areas like this. The second half you can listen to online, folks. You can go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. You can also, of course, download this podcast from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. We would love it if you give us a nice 5-star review. We always appreciate that from you folks. But we're going to continue the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable, and you can only listen to the second half online. So go now to CrawfordMediaGroup.net.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continuing the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast with Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, Neil Boron of Neil Boron Live from Buffalo, New York, John Rush, rather, of Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado, myself, Bob Duco, The Bob Duco Show in Detroit. We're talking about wokeness, cancel culture on steroids. It was in the news this week, Dr. Seuss. 6 of his books won't be published because of what are being called racist images. And this is just the latest to the list of all kinds of politically correct wokeness. We're offended by everything. Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head, really, the Muppet Show from the 70s now has to have offensive content warnings on them. Enough is enough, it seems. But, gentlemen, how do we as believers handle this, though? Where do we draw the line? Because, look, I don't want to be offensive to someone unnecessarily and cause someone pain, but then at the same time, I don't want to enable them to be wrapped in bubble wrap and not be able to get through life without their Play-Doh and support emotional puppy. So there's got to be some place where we draw a line. How do we figure out where that is? And Roger Marsh, is it all just subjective? I mean, how do we determine where the line is crossed?
Well, that's a good question. I was addressing earlier in the broadcast side of what we were discussing the fact that there's a danger for anybody into, we're talking about the woke culture saying everything's offensive, so everything must go. You know, that's one extreme. On the other hand, we could also run the risk of becoming that group that says, well, you guys are so offended and you need to get over it. So, you know, that's kind of the other gutter. And we're trying to keep, use the bowling analogy, you're trying to keep the ball in the alley, so you could actually make a few points here. And I think you got to take it case by case when you look at what's going on here, because like the Dr. Seuss discussion, well, okay, why is it offensive? All the headlines I saw on Tuesday when this thing first broke was Dr. Seuss is being canceled. End of story. If that's as far as the conversation goes, we got to find, okay, well, what's being canceled? Well, it turns out it's 6 books. And I'll be honest with you guys, 5 of them I've never even heard of. I mean, and mm-hmm. If I ran a zoo, the only reason I found out about it is because a friend of mine that I went to elementary school with, who's Japanese-American, whose grandparents were in internment camps and lost everything they had, he actually grew up to become a zoo director here in the People's Republic of California. He has a picture of him holding up that book in his office saying, if I ran a zoo. Now, one of the questions in If I Ran a Zoo is there's offensive Asian stereotypes in there. And Kent mm-hmm. Yamaguchi looks at this thing and says, hey, you know what? I like this book because I ran a zoo. You know, so you have to take it case by case. He's a very strong Christian. I know his family was deeply scarred by what happened in the internment camps. I mean, obviously, it ruined their grandparents' livelihood and for no reason. And even reparations didn't make things right for them. Older brother still has a real chip on his shoulder. But if we look at everything just kind of in the gross swath of there goes another logo, there goes another this, there goes another that, without getting to the heart of the conversation, to Neil's point, isn't there room for some kind of redemption? I've had on my program before a pastor in Florida who became a grand wizard in the Klan when he was literally late high school, early college years. And he became a Christian because they wanted him to become a chaplain for the Klan, because the Klan actually uses chaplains to find Bible verses to support their racism. And while he's reading the Gospel of John, God got a hold of his heart, and he went in and said, I can't be in the Klan anymore. Can you imagine walking away from the Klan when you're 22 years old? And now he co-pastors an African-American church in Florida and tells his story and has been telling this story for 40 years. So to Neil's point, if we go cancel culture too and say, okay, well, they're going to try to cancel everything, we're going to cancel them, then we're really missing the mark. There's got to be room for redemption and looking at each case individually and then finding people who have been impacted by this and asking, okay, has Aunt Jemima hurt you? Has Mrs. Butterworth hurt you? Uncle Ben, stuff like that. There are people who really have been hurt by those things. But the idea that, you know, I just don't want us to fall into that category where we just take a big swoop and say, now this is ridiculous. You guys got to get over it. I think we can do better, but it does take a lot of time. And in a culture that wants instant answers and on-demand access, our culture is not wired that way anymore. And we're really going to stand out like sore thumbs when we take a stand like this that says, let's take this case by case. Let's mm-hmm. talk to people who are being impacted by it. And then let's move forward with this. Not everything's bad. Not everything's good. But it really is going to take some time and intentionality.
What is it? Is it then case by case, John? A quick example. Last night, I was watching, I watch MTV, or I'm sorry, MTV, MeTV, okay? I watch MeTV sometimes, and I was watching a Happy Days rerun. I enjoyed the show Happy mm-hmm. Days, the font, right. E, okay? Pat Morita is an actor who he was in the Karate Kid movies, of course, but right. he played Arnold, the famous Arnold. You ever watch Pat Morita in an interview, okay? He doesn't speak with an accent at all. He speaks exactly as we're talking right now. However, he had to adopt a stereotypical Asian accent when he did Happy Days. He's talked about this in interviews. And so here's Pat Morita, who speaks as though we're exactly like we're talking now. But in Happy Days, it's like, you guys come here. You order cheeseburger, okay? You can't just come Arnold's and not eat, right. You know, okay?
Right.
And now I'm thinking to myself, it's a matter of time, okay? Happy Days hasn't been in anybody's sights yet, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen where suddenly that guy, before you know it, Arnold gets excised from Happy Days because now that's offensive. And I'm, you know, John, I get what Roger's saying. I get what everybody's saying about we can't just automatically dismiss it all with an eye roll. But there does come a point where it's like, come on, you know, let's, if we have to take it case by case, we will. I don't see any reason for us to now receive the power of suggestion that we're supposed to be offended by Pat Morita's Arnold character.
Well, or Pat Morita as Mr. Miyagi in Karate Kid,
right.
One of his greatest roles ever. Same thing.
There.
You know, he did exactly the same thing you were talking about there. So what you just said, by the way, when it comes to acting, okay, I mean, I guess we could even go farther and say everybody that pretends to be a British actor and have a British accent when they don't have one, or everybody right. That's ever played, you know, an Indian, or you know, we can go one step further and go all the way back to the, you know, the old litter commercial back in the day where, you know, you see right. The Indian crying where it's not even an Indian. I mean, guys, right. There's been so many things like this through the years that, you know, when you start talking about the acting side of the fence, I think that's a whole nother conversation. We can almost do a whole nother, you know, podcast just on actors and maybe what, you know, granted, these guys don't look at it this way, but what is their role in society and how can they portray the right things versus the wrong thing? That's a whole nother discussion for another day. But, I think when it comes to, you know, us as Christians and some of these things, I think you can always have dialogue. Of course, that's what we're supposed to do, have dialogue around anything. And I think what Roger said a minute ago is, you know, simply ask the question, what is it about that item that offends you? Let's have a conversation. Because at the end of the day, if they're offended by something that they shouldn't be, then I think, again, as Christians, it's our job to point that out. On the same token, if there is something there that's truly offensive, then okay, I'll listen. And if it's something that we need to be more sensitive to, then, you know, I'm all ears. But this business of just canceling something to cancel it because a few people say it should be without having any dialogue or conversation around it, that's as wrong in and of itself as what was there in the beginning that they're trying to cancel.
So, Neil, let's get with you and Roger, we've got the pastoral perspective. Let's get this pastoral perspective on how we handle stuff like this. Aunt Jemima, for example, we're mentioning this before. Last Friday during my free-for-all segment of the show, I had a lady call in, she's an African-American lady, and she said that it was right that the name Aunt Jemima was changed. She said, because that name is offensive. And I asked her, is it offensive today in 2021, or is it offensive when we look at it through the lens of 100 years ago? And she's like, well, yes, way back then, you know, the mammy kind of serving her white masters and whatever. And I said, yeah, but that's not what Aunt Jemima represents today. What it represents today is pancake syrup. And she's like, well, it doesn't matter, because if that's what it represented back then it's racist and insensitive for all time and the name must be changed. So then I asked her, Neil, I said, the Democratic Party used to represent the KKK, Jim Crow, and slavery. So are you offended when you hear the name Democratic Party? Do they have a responsibility to change your name? Or do you see the Democratic Party for what it is now and not through the lens of the KKK days and slavery? And she's like, well, that's different. I said, no, I don't think it is different. So it just seems as though, Neil, I understand that people say, hey, I'm offended when I see Aunt Jemima, but it's like, why do you have to look at it through that lens of 100 years ago? You're not looking at the name Democratic Party through the lens of 100 years ago. Why do you have to look at Aunt Jemima through that lens? Let's stop being offended instead of catering to everybody's offense. But I don't want to be insensitive as a Christian either. And yes, I know we got to take a break, but how do we balance this?
All right. Well, I'll think about it during the break. Let's do that. And we'll be back in just a moment with more of the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Dr. Michael Youssef leads the way for people living in spiritual darkness to discover the light of Jesus Christ. This tremendous outreach begins with the proclamation of God's word through the uncompromising biblical teaching of Dr. Michael Youssef. Leading the Way is here to equip and strengthen the church to stand strong and to advance the gospel in today's ever-changing world. Listen to Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef at ltw.org/listen and be sure to mention you heard about their program on the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
You're listening to the National Crawford Roundtable. My name is Neil Boron. Bob Duco leading the conversation out of Detroit, Michigan. John Rush in Denver, Colorado, and Roger Marsh in the People's Republic of California. I'm here in Buffalo, New York. And the woman who, you know, was concerned about some of the racial stereotypes being portrayed today, but was unwilling to say that it really applies to the whole thing related to the Democratic Party, I think is misguided. I think she's off base. And I think it, and I'm not picking on her, I'm just saying it represents selective enforcement of these, quote, ideals or, quote, values or whatever it is they're trying to push on us. And I think we need to be incredibly careful about it because these things do need to be looked at in a case-by-case kind of basis. And by the way, just as a conservative evangelical, I think it's important that we not look at Democrats as the party of slavery because they've progressed beyond that. Now,
right.
I don't agree with their policies, but I think let's call us, you know, balls and strikes. I almost said a spade, and I'm going to get canceled for saying that. Good Lord. Do you see how I stopped in the middle of that? I mean,
I get it.
Talk about truth moments. But okay, you right. got to call balls and strikes fairly. I say that all the time on this podcast. And so as conservatives, we need to say, you know what? We're not holding what happened in the 1940s or 50s in the Democratic Party against you or back during the days of slavery, back in the 1800s for sure. So So let's then take an honest look at where we're at. And honestly, what I'm also concerned about in these kind of arguments is the collateral damage that happens. Because while you think you're fixing one thing, you're actually breaking another. And I mean, one example of that in my mind would be the cancellation of the film Gone with the Wind, you know, being thrown off Netflix and stuff. It's a classic piece of, you know, filmography and literature, really, ultimately. Hattie McDaniel, who played Mammy in that film, was the first ever African-American woman to win an Academy Award. So what? She gets canceled? Like, we don't recognize her achievement in what was an incredible film, at least for its day. And, you know, I saw one article that said, you know, it's possible in the next 20, 30 years, no one's even going to ever watch that film. It's not going to be a classic anymore because it will have outlived its useful, you know, time or whatever. But the point is, Hattie McDaniel gets canceled. So then what? We stop running, you know, sports highlights that include the era prior to Jackie Robinson because it was a racist time in Major League history. Ultimately, then you just cancel everything. And I think as believers, we need to stand for truth and righteousness. We have to have sensitive hearts, care about, you know, how other people are being affected, even by our words. I'm thinking about, I think it's Ephesians 4:29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. You know, that's what we're called to as believers. And at times we can offend other people, and we need to be sensitive to the fact that when we do, we need to apologize and generally, I think, care about these issues. But on the other hand, not be bullied by this kind of talk and this kind of behavior. Bottom line is, what we're talking about is objective truth, and these people are trying to make everything subjective, and there's no winning that in the long run. So I just think here's my thought. We stand and take our punches because ultimately it's going to cost us something. You know, Jesus said, don't be surprised when men revile you and persecute you, say all manner of evil against you falsely on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And like, ultimately, that's, I think, where we're headed, that we should expect that this is going to happen because as believers, we do speak truth. The offensive truth John was talking about that some pastors preach from a pulpit or that we share when we're willing to love our brother enough to tell him the truth about what God's word says. And he says, no, I don't think it's a sin. And we say, but God's word says it's a sin. And I love you enough to share it with you to say, God helped me overcome this sin. And in the end, if they cancel us or file lawsuits against us, it's probably going to happen because in my estimation, that's where history's headed.
Roger, as a pastor, how is it okay to tell someone you're being hypersensitive about this? I know you feel offended, but you shouldn't feel that way. I know as husbands, that's something you never say to your wives. You
nope.
shouldn't feel that way.
Never.
Don't tell me how to feel. Okay.
Exactly.
Roger, we are given the power of suggestion from the media, from culture, from the woke world that tells us you should be offended by this. And then suddenly, what do you know? We become offended by it because we were told that we're supposed to be offended by this. Look, I have red hair, okay? I'm a redheaded guy. If I decided that I was going to launch some kind of coalition of angry people that are offended by Ronald McDonald because he's got a red hair, and I get all offended and upset and go, no, I don't think we should go to McDonald's, and I don't think that the church gathering should be bringing in McDonald's food. It should be Burger King because redheads are not clowns with big goofy feet, and I don't appreciate it. And I get triggered whenever I see the redheaded clown. Don't you, Roger, as my pastor, need to say to me, Bob, I love you, but you need to toughen up a little bit, okay, and quit being so hypersensitive about it. Stop seeing offense when offense is not there. Otherwise, you're going to be offended by anything and everything. This doesn't rise to that level. Isn't there a time where people like me, if I were doing that, need to be told, knock it off?
Well, I'm going to do something I wouldn't do as a pastor, which is to say, I think we need to take a break. And when we come back from break, I'll answer the question. But let's go ahead and take a quick break here, and we'll continue with more of this conversation as the National Crawford Roundtable podcast continues.
Dr. James Dobson left a successful career in academia to preserve and promote the biblical family in America. The radio broadcasting ministry of Dr. Dobson spans over four decades, earning him 17 honorary doctorate degrees and an induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Today, Dr. Dobson continues to champion marriage and parenthood through Family Talk. Listen every weekday at drjamesdobson.org and be sure to reference the National Crawford Roundtable podcast when asked how you listen to Family Talk.
Continuing now with the National Crawford Roundtable podcast, along with Bob Duco, Neil Boron, and John Rush, I'm Roger Marsh. And Bob's question to me, in a pastoral sense, you know, what do you do with the person who comes in and says, I'm offended by this, I'm offended by that? And Bob, you know, I mean, you're lucky as a redhead. I mean, aren't there like ginger conventions and stuff you can go to have, you know, redhead power? So you can get a coalition together against Ronald McDonald for crying out loud for making everybody look bad. But no, I'd say that somewhat tongue in cheek. You know, there's a guy who is a regular contributor to the Bottom Line show. His name is Joe Dallas, and he's a counselor with a group called Genesis Biblical Counseling. And Joe was involved in all sorts of sexual sin when he was younger, and as a Christian came out of the homosexual lifestyle. He spent the past 30 years counseling people who have those types of, you know, gender dysphorias and things like that. And one thing that Joe always says is, I never tell anybody that their feelings are wrong. When we start the counseling process, I don't want anyone to feel like they're being beat up for their feelings, because their feelings are theirs and I can't tell them how to feel. So I think in terms of the response that I would give to somebody, first and foremost, I would do my level best to say, hey man, those are your feelings, and you know, I hear what you're saying, and I want to respect your dignity for having those feelings. Then moving forward, you know, again, back to the piece by piece situation, if you want to look at, say, the three that are on the list that were germane to my family, Aunt Jemima, Mrs. Butterworth, Uncle Ben, I think of the pastor from Fellowship Bible Church in Atlanta, Crawford Loritz, who was he did a Facebook Live right after one of the race issues. It was Michael Brown or Trayvon Martin, something like that. This was many years ago. And he was talking about everybody he knew, you know, growing up in the South, and he worked with the major ministry, Family Life Today, and they were doing all sorts of great things. He goes, I have so many white friends and Asian friends and whatever, but when I see something like this, I remember what it was like in the 1950s to have to go sit up in the balcony at the movie theater, because that's where the black kids had to sit. The white kids got the good seats. They never cleaned up there. There was vomit and stuff all over the place, and if I wanted to go to the movies, that's where I had to sit. I remember what it was like in the South to see all those different places. And so this is the term that that really stuck with me. He said, I had this PTSD moment where I was remembering what it was like back then. And so, you know, to your point about the caller who said, you know, I'm offended by whatever, Aunt Jemima or whatever it was, and then your point, which is very well taken. I mean, African Americans get taken advantage by the Democrat Party all the time. But I kept thinking, yeah, but if she had an experience like that, for whatever reason it was, if she knows what it's like to be turned away service, not be able to go someplace. And there are people who are still in our culture, you know, who are living proof of that. I mean, my mother-in-law was born in 1940 in Atmore, Alabama, so she has a very, very strong recollection of what it was like to have that kind of experience. So for us to tell somebody, hey, you shouldn't be offended by Uncle Ben or Aunt Jemima, and I'm thinking, well, what if I'm that African-American woman who's older now but remembers what it was like when that's the only kind of job you could get? I want to hear that. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to, you know, say, well, we got to cancel the brand, and quite frankly, I think what that Pearl Mining, whatever the heck, Milling Company, I think they kind of signed their own death certificate with that one, because no one's going to buy that stuff because they're not going to know what it is. But this is the kind of nuance that goes into a conversation like this from my perspective that says, okay, if I'm a pastor and someone comes in and says I'm offended by this, I don't want anybody to be, Bob, how'd you describe it, you know, wet toilet paper, you know, as far as skin. I mean, that's, nobody should be that thin-skinned. But as we move forward and as we have the dialogues, I want to hear the voice of the person who says, this is why I'm offended, and meet them there as opposed to saying, well, I'm here and the rest of the world's here, so you should be here too. It's a subtle nuance, but I think it's an important one.
Yeah, and that does beg the question, though, how much do we enable that kind of thinking? Because for the person who says, well, yeah, but this reminds me, this triggers me, this reminds me of the days in the movie theater when it, you know, we had to sit in the back and wait. Okay, I get that. I get that. But guess what? There's all kinds of things that's part of our history that's going to remind you of that. Don't ever go to an antique store then, because everything in that antique store comes from a time when black people were treated that way. Do we need to get rid of black and white movies now completely, because that's going to remind – and any movie set in the 1960s or earlier – is automatically going to have that kind of thing as well. So where do we draw the line, John Rush, in saying enough is enough? Look at it through the lens of today. Don't take everything that's said in the past and look at it through the lens of the past.
I agree with you. And you know, what you're really saying is we can't change history. History is what it is. In fact, I would go one step further and say we need to not cancel those things out of history, because the best way to learn not to repeat them is to have that vividly in our minds and in front of us, so we can look at those things and say, that's what we used to be. That's not what we are any longer. Mm-hmm. It's right. Why all of us, by the way, you know, keep pictures and mementos and things that we can always look back even in our own lives and say, wow, you know, those are things that I would never want to go do again. That, you know, that's an experience in my life that I learned from or I grew from. And so you cannot change history. And I think any time we do, we're in trouble. And I think, you know, some of the wisest individuals of all time, you know, Eisenhower, for example, when he was in Germany, making sure that we took tons and tons of pictures of the Holocaust so that we would never forget the travesty of what happened there. I mean, that's a prime example of where we need to remember what happened, even though it was bad, even though, you know, millions of Jews and others lost their lives and were literally slaughtered. We cannot forget that and move on just because we don't like seeing it. The reality is we need to see it so we don't ever do it again.
Right. Very true. Very true. Well, it does seem as though there's almost a kind of, as I was mentioning before, a power of suggestion where we're told how to feel about something. And then unfortunately, a lot of us automatically start feeling that way. And one of the examples that comes to mind, I think I may have mentioned this in one of our political podcasts we were doing, is the term Kung Flu as it relates to coronavirus. When Donald Trump was speaking at a rally last year in Tulsa, and he didn't even call coronavirus Kung Flu. He merely said, there's a lot of different names that people are calling coronavirus, for the Wuhan virus, the China virus, Kung Flu, the Chinese coronavirus. Because he merely listed that among the different terms that are being used, there was this attack on Donald Trump that he almost, it was as though he used a racial epithet, that he dared to say the term Kung Flu. And I was amazed how many people called into my show and said, well, Bob, you got to admit, I mean, come on, that's clearly a racist term. And I'm like, no, it's not. You're falling for the feeble Jedi mind trick that says, these aren't the droids you're looking for. These aren't the droids we're looking for. Okay, this is a racist offensive term. This is a racist offensive term. Stop falling for it. And the example I give is when Barack Obama was president, his Veterans Administration used the slogan Kung Flu to convince everybody to get their flu shots. And they even had a monkey dressed up, a cartoon monkey dressed up in a martial arts outfit, kicking this, what looked like a coronavirus kind of big virus, and give it a good Kung Flu kick. Hi-ya, okay, Kung Flu, we're going to Kung Flu the flu in a Kung Flu kick. They used that in the VA. Nobody considered that controversial, because there was nobody out there going, you need to be offended by this. If it were Donald Trump's administration, then we would have been told to be offended by it. So I understand the different double standard at play in the media. What makes my eye twitch, guys, is when we fall for it and then we start feeling those emotions that we're told by the woke community that we're supposed to feel. And that's what I'm pushing back against, so that we recognize, as we said in the very beginning, so we recognize the difference between a minstrel show being run today and the Muppet show. I'm trying to see, get people to see the difference.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. I just wanted to underscore what you said in terms of finding out what the source of the push is. So much of the woke cancellation stuff is coming from, you know, white progressives and academic worlds who they've just decided this is how you feel, this is how you think. And that's nothing could be further from the truth. We don't actually get a chance to deal with the actual issues when you've got the small but vocal, they kind of remind me of that little horn in Revelation, you know, doing all the mouthing. And if just a few are canceling Dr. Seuss and, you know, taking the broad strokes here without giving people a chance to actually have the meaningful conversations and agreeing to disagree, but it at least giving us the opportunity to feel like we can have a conversation about it, as opposed to saying, well, this should be offensive to everybody because that was and that was and that was and that was. It all gets put in the same pile. So I wanted to underscore I'm agreeing with that aspect of this 100%.
Absolutely. Well, I know we're kind of winding this down here. Any John or Neil, any kind of final thoughts on how we as Christians handle the whole wokeness cancel culture thing, so that, as you guys have rightly said, especially Roger, we don't go all the way to one extreme, which is to pretend that there's nothing that people are legitimately offended by. But we also certainly don't go where culture has taken us, which is you have to be offended about anything and everything.
Well, let me just jump in real quick and say I've had a couple of really meaningful personal conversations with people who may have been offended by some of these things over the years. For instance, a Native American pastor who pastors two churches not far from Buffalo. One is on an Indian reservation, the other one just off an Indian reservation. And what's interesting is that the one on the reservation includes, you know, white Anglo-Saxon people, people of all backgrounds and racial makeups, including Native Americans. And so is the other one. They're both mixed race congregations, one on the reservation, one not. But, you know, in talking about things like sports team names and stuff, he said, you know, by and large, the Native American community isn't offended by any of this. In fact, names like Brave, you know, are kind of a term of endearment, so to speak. He said, on the other hand, you know, when you dress up somebody in a chief outfit and have him dance around, well, the chief outfits are only worn by people who are actually chiefs. And the dance is, you know, essentially a mockery, because it's not ultimately what we do in the Native American community. You know, people are mimicking this kind of thing. So he said, it's six of one, half dozen of the other, and I appreciate you having a conversation with me about it. But, you know, I learned a lot from that. And then secondarily, motive comes into it, because I think that in conversations like about Aunt Jemima, I loved Aunt Jemima pancakes as a kid. I couldn't wait to have pancakes on Saturday mornings in our house growing up. It was always something I looked forward to. I appreciated it. And if I wanted pancakes, I wanted Aunt Jemima pancakes. It was something I revered, in a sense. So to be able to express that to an African-American brother in a conversation and hear back from him why some would have a problem with that, there was an opportunity for growth. And so I think that our best opportunity here in this whole thing isn't going to be to try to win this war in one fell swoop. As a matter of fact, I kind of think the ship has sailed on the whole cancel culture thing. Like, this is the world we live in, but we can still win individual battles. We may not win the whole war, but we can have meaningful conversations with people who've been hurt by these kind of things or not, and grow as a result of what we've been learning in the process. And the other thing I wanted to say, just before I throw it back to John here, is you mentioned, I believe it was Barack Obama, and you know, some of the past things that have been said, including conversation about monkeys. Well, I forget what it was exactly.
The Kung Flu.
And the idea of monkeys. And isn't it interesting that some of the cancel culture people are believers in evolution, who their own ancestors, in fact, would be primates. So, you know, if you stop and think about it, they should have taken offense for that reason, but apparently they didn't.
Oh, don't get me started on Darwinian evolution.
Okay.
Charles Darwin himself taught that, his words, the gap between the Negro and the ape is more narrow than the gap between the white man and the ape. Okay, that black people were less
Okay, so there you go.
Than white people are closer to apes. This was Charles Darwin himself, and that's Darwinian theory. But that, of course, is
selective
and
enforcement
censored from the school books on evolution today. All I know. So very interesting discussion, gentlemen. And so hopefully we didn't offend and trigger too many people listening to us today with the conversation. But always enjoy catching up and catching up with you folks listening. We appreciate you tuning into this National Crawford Roundtable podcast. We would love it if you would rate the podcast. Give us a nice 5-star review. We will gladly receive this from you. You can go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. You can also go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. Listen to past shows as well, past episodes, CrawfordMediaGroup.net. If you would, while you're there, click on that link for Compassion International. Sponsor one of those kids that are waiting for sponsorship, okay, waiting for food. So CrawfordMediaGroup.net. John Rush, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado. Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California. Neil Boron, Neil Q. Boron. Neil Boron Live, Buffalo, New York. Myself, Bob Duco, The Bob Duco Show out of Detroit. Guys, always get great catching up with you. Thanks a lot. Looking forward to next week.
Likewise.
Likewise. Hey, thanks, Bob.
We'll see you. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless.
You've been listening to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of today's culture through a biblical lens, brought to you by Compassion International, a worldwide ministry bringing hope and Jesus to children in need. Visit CrawfordMediaGroup.net and click on the Compassion logo to sponsor a child. You can download this podcast from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and more, and it's also available at CrawfordMediaGroup.net. You can give this podcast a 5-star rating on your Apple app, and be sure to look for the notification on your National Crawford Roundtable Podcast app for when the next weekly edition is ready for you to hear. This has been a Crawford Media Group production.